Say hi to spring's most amazing style steal at Old Navy. One day only, today. Women's tanks are just $2. And don't forget to come in now to redeem your super cash. Hurry in. High fashion, Old Navy. Valid 4/29, limit 5 per customer. Select styles in stores only.
Welcome to Golden State of Mindcasts. This is Ivan. Nate and Bram are both off today, but I am super happy to be joined by two of the smartest and hardest working basketball guys around. From the Blazers' Edge, we have Dan Morang and David McKay. Thanks for joining us today, guys.
Hey, no problem, man. Even though we're getting big timed by your guys, we still showed up.
Yeah, what is the deal? They just both bailed last minute. I mean, left me hanging with you guys.
That's you getting the short straw, man.
Yeah, lowly me has to slum with Blazers folks. It's rough.
And we have to slum with Blazers folk all the time.
This is very true.
So, of course, we're talking today because of tomorrow's game between the Warriors and the Blazers up in Portland. And I want to get to that matchup in a little bit. But first, kind of one of the more recent topics at hand is the All-Star selections and maybe the lack thereof for Portland. Kind of a notable absence of Dame Lillard and even CJ McCollum to a degree. Dan, I know you've got some takes on this. Do you think that they were kind of both legitimately snubbed or not? Like should they have been? Should either of those guys have been placed higher than who made it onto the team?
Any other year, it's crazy to snub either one of these guys. But the way the West is right now, you've got two guys that are averaging triple doubles. I mean, one of them is not even a starter on the All-Star team. So let's go ahead and pump the brakes on Dame Lillard getting snubbed. Last year, I was all about the Dame snub and the chip on the shoulder, the way he was playing and heading into January, into the All-Star break. And then, of course, coming out and dump trucking the Warriors. I mean, everything that came out of that suggested that Lillard was a legitimate snub. I mean, last night, though, with the Blazers, you saw what that kind of effect had on Lillard again, and that's kind of what's irritating me right now, that it took some chip on his shoulder All-Star snub to get him to play like he was down the stretch last year. So snub or no snub, I'm trying to figure out what it takes for him to play at that level all the time.
So has that been noticeable as soon as that was announced? He's been playing with a chip on his shoulder?
He said it last night. Post-game interview, was it a conscious effort was it unconsciously he went about it? He said, no, it was conscious. It was totally conscious. So, I mean, that to me kind of bothers me. But
yeah. And does it surprise you? I mean, it kind of feels like with a lot of the talk about that backcourt in the last couple of years, you know, questions about how CJ and Dame fit together. That feels like enough of a cause for chip on shoulder on like any given day. Is that kind of worn off, and now that he needs these new things to motivate him, or is just kind of, it's been a hard season, obviously. So
26-6-5 is nothing to sneeze at. Right. Dame's stat line, when you just look at the stat line, his efficiency, all that stuff across the board, he's having a career year. Career best field goal percentage, true shooting percentage. His usage rate is actually down a little bit. He's taking less shots, getting to the free throw line more. I mean, you look at across the board and what he's doing it better, but it doesn't seem to have the same level of impact. Now, you look at what he did last night. In last night's game, we had a legit Dame time sighting where he drops 13 straight points and basically carries the team. That's been missing.
I'm going to jump in real quick. We do have one thing that's actually down this year, and that's his three-point shooting.
Yep.
He's shooting something like 34%, and that's supposed to be his like bread and butter. He goes out there and he averages, I think it's seventh in the league in three-point attempts, but he's just like Al-Farouq Aminu shot a better percentage last year.
Right. Yeah, go ahead and let that silence settle in. Yeah. Okay, now we're going to set the table here.
I will say I do think that Dame is better than, let's say, for instance, DeAndre Jordan, who made it in.
Sure.
You know, I think there's an unwritten rule that if a Clipper doesn't make it in, Doc won't invite anyone to his birthday party. So, you know, Chris is injured and Blake is injured, so DeAndre by default comes in there. I honestly think, though, that if it was going to be someone else, it shouldn't have been Dame or CJ anyway. It should have been probably Karl-Anthony Towns.
Or Gobert.
Or Conley. I mean, there's just a laundry list.
Yeah.
Right, we talked about it.
Reinforces the point.
we talked about it in our podcast a few days ago with Nate and Bram when they did show up, that you know, kind of comparing the Lillard to Conley and who would actually be more deserving this year of making it if one of them made it. And it was kind of a tight race. Quite honestly, I mean, probably Conley.
I mean, stat lines don't compare, but when you look at the team records and performance versus expectations, all the injuries the Grizzlies have had and still managing to be successful, right. Yeah, I would personally myself, I would probably give that nod to Conley.
And the relative impact defensively, I think.
Yeah.
It has to be taken into account, even if you can't look at the lines, which they often do have for All-Star selections. It kind of seems a little more balanced this year, maybe, than one would have thought, except for the glaring, very, very glaring inclusion of four different Warriors players at the expense of the Portland team and a couple of other teams that kind of, you know, didn't get what one might have thought is fair representation. So you have four Warriors and then basically one player of each of the next six teams that are in the playoff hunt. And then you've got Cousins and one other player outside of the playoff hunt. I forgot who was now. So they really tried to spread it around like you're joking. Like the Clippers have to get one because they're in that four seed right now. Do you think that if the Blazers had performed better, I mean, obviously they would have to have one of those guys in there. And honestly, to me, it would have been Klay who they made it over.
For sure. I think if the Blazers are a 500 team right now, even just at the level, Dame probably makes it in over Klay.
I was going to say exactly the same thing. If anybody wasn't going to make it, it was going to be Klay. I mean, don't get me wrong, Klay's a fantastic player in his own right, but he's a different archetype from everybody else really in the NBA in that he's okay off the bounce, but you look at all the guards around the league that are making the All-Star team, every one of these guys is on another level off the bounce and creating their own shot. And I think that may actually help him in a weird kind of way, and it sets him apart from the other guys because he's a two-way player, but he's a different kind of two-way player.
Right.
I feel like we had a comment in our Blazers Edge comment section for the article where we were talking about Dame and CJ not making it. Someone brought up that Klay is assisted on like something like 96% of his threes and 70 something percent of his twos. He doesn't create for himself within that offense.
Yeah, he doesn't. Obviously, he doesn't need to. And his role in that offense is actually to not like to to allow others to create because he's spreading the floor. And really having quite an impact from that perspective and obviously defensively, picking up, defensive, abilities that Steph doesn't have. So he's defending a lot of the point guards, that they try to hide Steph from, in order to not get him in foul trouble. So he's having a big impact, but he doesn't have nearly as much, weight on his shoulders as those guys. And so it was a little strange to me for us to get four, players, but it'll be fun to see all four of those guys in the court at the same time. At least
I want to see Kerr throw Westbrook out there with him.
Yeah, that was mentioned. And somebody asked Kerr that in a press conference, and I think he just smiled and walked away. I think he responded. David, you get to talk to these guys in the locker room, and Dan too. You guys are both, you know, fairly close to the team, more so than us Golden State of Minders generally. Was there kind of a feeling coming from the team other than Lillard, you know, proclaiming that he had a chip on his shoulder? Was there any thoughts from CJ or kind of generally from the team of like, you know what, you know, screw this?
Well, I talked to them at practice today. Dame wasn't available for the media, but CJ seems to look at it, you know, it is what it is. They're prepping for the Warriors tomorrow as if it's just another team, which, you know, I guess they are, even if they're amazing. They're, you know, best team in the NBA right now. But I don't think they're too burnt about it. I mean, they maybe, yeah, a little personally, but they're professionals and they're going to get on with it.
Yeah, I think you've heard it from CJ and from Lillard. I think the surprising thing was from McCollum, the player voting, he finished fifth in the Western Conference. And I think that was a big, big surprise to a lot of people. But it also kind of shows the impact that CJ's having among his peers. Guys on the Warriors, Kevin Durant in particular, has talked about how good CJ is. He's called him one of the best shooters in the NBA. A lot of national writers are calling him the best pure shooter in the league right now, surpassing Steph. And I know that that's like heresy in the Bay Area, but there's what he's doing right now from all points on the floor is, if not for Steph's season the year before last, we'd be talking about it as on a historical level. He's absolutely torching it from all over the floor. And so he's kind of seeing his own star rise, but he knows that he's not at that level yet. Lillard, he's said that, hey, I was looking on social media, I was reading the comments and kind of reading the tea leaves, and he prepared himself for this. And I think last year getting snubbed kind of prepared him for it altogether, and that, you know what, it is what it is. I can still make an All-NBA team. I mean, second team All-NBA last year. He can figure that out.
Do you think CJ's agent had an impact on him having a change of heart and taking part in the three-point contest? Because before he had said that if he didn't make the team, he wasn't going to do any of the extracurriculars, but he confirmed at practice day, he said, yeah, you know, I am going to do the three-point contest.
Oh, I mean, getting into the three-point contest, I mean, if you're not going to be in the All-Star game, what's the next brightest, shiniest thing you can do? Dunk contest. Well, we're not seeing CJ in that. I think he's got four total dunks this year, but he's shooting over 42% from three. I mean, if you're going to get a guy out there on the floor, and he's a catch-and-shoot knockdown guy, if there's a guy who's got that kind of rhythm to get going in a contest like that, it's CJ, and that can only help push his star up even higher.
You know, speaking of things that you can do at All-Star, like, I kind of feel like the three-point contest has surpassed the dunk contest, even in kind of fans' eyes. At least people that I've talked to, it's like, oh man, the dunk contest is just kind of boring these days, and especially with the players that you're getting in there who, you know, oftentimes are, you know, third tier players who have bounce, but, you know, nobody really knows who they are. The three-point contest is where the, you know, the stars have kind of been more present in the last couple of years.
Well, I think the dunk contest, they keep tinkering with the format here and there, and that's, you know, you need a little uniformity for that to stick and be fun. But part of the thing with the dunk contest is it's almost a joke at this point that you just give 10s to everyone. Like, yeah, that was good. There's nowhere to go from here, so 50s all around, and that's how you end up with Aaron Gordon losing last year. I don't think he should have lost.
Insane.
But I'm really excited for the three-point contest this year because I think Tim Cato, actually, you know, for SB Nation, had said that Wes is going to do it. So we can have Wes and CJ competing at the same time. That should be a fun little Portland reunion.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that the dunk contest had lost some of its luster if it wasn't for last season. LaVine and Gordon put on a show. I mean, that's like Neek and Jordan. I mean,
right.
Those two guys.
Well, he should have won that too.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, that was nuts. I mean, I haven't been that hyped at a dunk contest since the mid early 90s. I mean, it was that spectacular. And Gordon's going to come back, so there'll be some shine to be put on there, to say the least. So
I just hope they have someone jump a Kia this year.
The full length of the Kia, man. I want more Kia jumped over. That's what I want. Last question about the All-Star, because it's something you brought up about the fans. Sorry, the players giving CJ his due in the player vote, and thinking about like the dunk contest of ex players judging the dunk contest, giving all tens, but still like. There's kind of a favoritism aspect of the voting from the players and the ex players that it's kind of strange to me. And you see the kind of difference between fans who are also really bad at voting and then players who also seem to be pretty bad at voting
and right? Voting like, for themselves.
Yeah, they vote for themselves and they vote for like. The guys who they, you know, maybe idolized growing up or coming into the league, those offensive players who they might have watched a lot of tape of because they wanted to take their moves, seems to happen more often than like who is actually the best players, like who are the most impactful.
Well, I feel like there was some guy who hasn't even like played any real minutes in the NBA who's just on a roster, got like two votes from the player vote because some of them aren't taking it seriously. I think a lot of us saw Tony Allen's voting process, which was an interesting look into that. But yeah, I mean, we talk about fans as you know, large market, like, okay, you're going to get votes in New York and LA and stuff like that, and places that are better at marketing more globally as well. And then you look at players and they're biased in different ways too. I mean, it's not always going to be who necessarily deserves it.
I mean, the voting process is obviously a little bit wonky, as Golden State fans can attest to. I mean, how close were we to having Zaza in?
Not close enough, man.
I mean, the nation of Georgia is not exactly that big, so I'm wondering exactly what's happening there. But
that would have been pretty amusing, though, to have the entire Golden State Warriors starting five.
Yeah,
hey, I'll take Zaza over DeAndre Jordan for the All-Star contest. Fun for me.
When I look at how they're doing that, I would expect Adam Silver to make some tweaks coming up. If there's one thing Silver's done, is that he's kind of been on top of stuff like this to keep, not to say it would be embarrassing, but I'm fairly certain that the NBA wouldn't have been thrilled, or if had it been a lot closer, that Zaza would have just magically not made it.
Yeah, I think this new 50-25-25 split with the fans, the players, and the media may have been in part experimental, sort of easing toward perhaps a brighter future where it's just fixed entirely. I don't know if there's a way to do that, but I would expect this to be the first step in a variety of tweaks to hopefully end up getting the All-Star game, the All-Star voting, that is just a little more reasonable.
Right. Well, NBA All-Star voting is not the only place where voting is not ideal. It's a lot of areas to fix. Let's talk about, we've talked a lot about CJ and Dame fitting together. For such a potent offensive duo that they are, the offense as a whole has still been pretty middle of the pack this year, right? Like, what else is going on there that's not working out, that they can improve on?
There's a lot of things going on, particularly the flux of the starting lineup due to little nicks and nags of injuries. Nothing has been serious, but when CJ or Damian go down for any period of time, that's going to take 25 to 33% of your offense. I mean, depending on how things shake out, those guys combine for over 50 points a game. For a team that's averaging 100, 203 points a game, you lose one of those guys, that's going to pull a lot away from the other guy. CJ did an admirable job, incredible job, really. In the 11 games that Damian Lillard has missed in his career, CJ's been on the floor for every single one of them. In those games, he's averaging over 32 points and over 55% true shooting percentage. That's insane when he's the only option on the floor.
Part of the challenge with the Blazers right now in their backcourt is that if you play one without the other, then they flounder. The offense just tanks. But if you play them both at the same time, the defense can't handle it. So there's no great middle ground right now, and I think they're playing with a variety of different experimental lineups to sort of things. I think right now we have Evan and Noah in the starting lineup.
Yeah.
Part of that is, you know, Mo's out, but I don't think Mo will actually rejoin the starting lineup when he's better. They're just trying to figure something out, anything to really keep both ends afloat.
The thing is that it's no secret that I never thought that Damian and CJ could coexist for a long period of time and be totally successful. The defensive issues are just too big of a problem in today's NBA. You have to have somebody there at the one of the two that can at least play legitimate two-way basketball for 35 minutes a night. That being said, when the Blazers have been fully healthy and had their original starting lineup on the floor, that's Lillard, McCollum, Harkless, Aminu, Plumlee, they actually have a positive net rating. Their defense is actually, I believe it's top seven in the league when that starting lineup is on the floor. So I think their defensive rating is like 101 or 102. So it's actually pretty good for that period of time. However, once one of those two guards goes off the floor, the offense drops down and the defense has to step it up even more. And that just kind of compounds the issue. This is not a team that can afford to get behind a ton because they're not going to get a lot of stops.
Yeah. And then one thing I know I've complained to you about privately, which I suppose can be complained about publicly now, is that you look at the Blazers and their pursuit of a defensive big, and they're like, we really need a defensive big. That'll fix our problems because we're, you know, we're pot committed to Dame and CJ. We're going to make sure that we keep this core together. And, you know, that's great because they're both amazing offensive players. But part of the reason you need a great defensive big is because the way the team's constructed is really hard on whoever is the defensive big because the perimeter defense is so leaky.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that. Like that is kind of the question that bounces around, you know, national circles and kind of casual fandom of like, oh, you know, if they can get a rim protecting big, and they tried with Festus Ezeli, and that obviously hasn't worked out. But if they can get that guy, that, you know, it'll solve a lot of those problems. And I wanted to know, like, if it, I mean, clearly Lillard and McCollum are not great defensively as a backcourt. Are there other solutions possibly of, you know, adding wing defenders rather than just relying on having a kind of a cleanup big man, to patrol the paint? Like, is a Crab doesn't seem to be, I thought that he would be a better defender than his numbers indicate, at least. Is there any, you know, other people that you're kind of looking at or wondering about, like what pieces we can fit in here to actually improve defense on the perimeter first so that you don't have to worry as much about the interior?
Well, right now, what they've tried to do is they put Evan in the starting lineup. And I think Mike Richmond just posted an article earlier today called something like The Good, the Bad, and the Nerdy, and it deals with the numbers. And the reason for that, you know, you've got him in there for defensive purposes because the team actually plays really solid defense with Dame, CJ, Evan, Noah, and Mason as the starters. And the only lineup I think that surpassed that for Richmond was having Aminu in there in place of Noah. But they're definitely trying to get that length at the wing and have Evan out there pestering point guards and just trying to do whatever they can because it's not working the way it was originally set up.
The defense itself and the way the team is structured, and I use this kind of loosely, but it's flawed. If you take the two iterations of the Blazers that people have known in recent memory, the Lillard, Aldridge, Batum, Matthews, Lopez iteration, and what we have now, not only was the previous iteration better defensively, they're better offensively. All of those guys in that previous iteration made you work on the other end too. Defensively, opponents now, they know that if they take Dame and CJ away, that Portland's going to struggle. And that allows other teams to dictate on both ends of the floor. And that's something that Portland is really struggling with. And if Portland could go another way and get a wing that is a defensive wing, they already have that really kind of in Harkless and Aminu. The problem is what they give you on the other end. Now, if you're throwing Kawhi Leonard on this team, yeah, that makes a big difference because he's a two-way player. I mean, you look around the league right now, the premier teams in the league all have that two-way wing. And you could say Thompson and Draymond and Iggy kind of come together on that. You've got Kawhi, you've got LeBron. I mean, those are the teams that really make it happen right now. And as much as everybody wants to say a big will solve a lot of issues, I think a guy like Nerlens Noel could come in and do fantastic in Portland, but it's not going to solve everything because they're right. Still lacking punch on the other end.
Yeah, I think a defensive big like that is essentially a Band-Aid for the corner that Portland's painted themselves into, to mix idioms here. But I mean, when you look at guys like LeBron and Kawhi and Draymond and Clay and so on, you put them on any team and that team's going to be better. Portland, I don't think there's a wing like that, even at like that one tier down, that's available right now.
And it kind of underscores the problem that they've had, which is Aminu is just simply not performing offensively as he was last year, right? Like, and he's been injured and he missed a lot of games. But it almost seems like he's the solution. He just needs to be better.
Yeah, you're right to an extent. I mean, defensively, what he's meant to this team, if you just look at the analytics behind it, he should be considered for Defensive Player of the Year. I mean, if you're just looking at the analytics behind it, the impact that he has on this team defensively is something you just cannot underscore enough. It's insane. And I don't know how you can attribute that much of an impact to one guy. But, I mean, if you want to get into the numbers behind all this stuff, Lillard by himself defensively in isolation, one-on-one coverage is not bad. If you try to post him up, he's better than your average point guard. Him and CJ, both their problems are in the pick and roll. And that's where a guy like Aminu really can't help a ton. If you look at what's wrong with Dame, you look at the percentage of times that he gets caught on picks. If you look at what synergy has to offer, he's getting caught on the pick 44% of the time. It means he goes into the pick almost half the time he's put in a pick and roll. That's insane. That's a number that you can't compare really across the board with guys that are premier players at that position. CJ McCollum gets into the same situation under 30% of the time, and he's put in almost as many pick and rolls as Lillard. I mean, that underscores how bad Lillard is in that particular play type.
Just for fun, Warriors fans who are listening to this, watch that tomorrow. Like watch Damian when Draymond comes up or when Zaza comes up and see exactly like how much of a problem it is. He cannot get around screens to save his life most of the time. Sorry, Dame, all that stuff. But like he's just I don't want to say embarrassing because that's really harsh, but it's embarrassing. He runs into it, he tries to go left, he tries to go right. He kind of like he'll put an arm out to contest or something, but it's not enough.
I wonder how much of that is a skill that one can learn, or if it's just. I mean, he's got decent size for a point guard generally. Is he not? Obviously should be accustomed to trying to get through screens. He's been doing it all his life. Do you guys think there's anything attributable to that?
There's two things there, at least for me. One of them is effort. He does bail on plays, and I hate to say it, but he does. It's excusable to an extent. If you look at every premier player in the NBA that has a usage rate and the ball in their hands that much and gets put in the pick and roll that often, you're going to bail on a couple of those a night. When you're getting hit 45, 50 times a night with screens by 250, 270, 280-pound men over and over and over again, there's going to be a couple you're going to die on. That's just going to happen. The other thing is just the inability to take correct angles, which to me is the part that blows my mind. This is a guy that came into the league as one of the most pick and roll ready offensive guards in NBA history. And you can look at the numbers. From his rookie year, this guy knew how to run a pick and roll offensively. If you know the angles to set a guy up on offensively, how can you not understand those angles defensively? And that's what kills me.
Yeah, and kind of underscores the importance of two-way players and kind of the interest that some players kind of carry over those offensive like understanding of offense onto the defensive end and maybe vice versa to a degree, and you know the Warriors I think are kind of underrated in the number of players that they have that are good both ways. Durant, obviously, and Durant should be on first team defense this year as he's played. And he's huge for them in that role that, like, you know, he hasn't really played that particular defensive role in his career. And he just stepped in and he's the weak side help on the interior and is able to switch on to anybody. And so you have Durant, you have Clay who can do a lot of switching and plays both ways. You've got Draymond, obviously, Iguodala, Sean Livingston, is also a pretty good two-way player.
Last year when you guys had Barnes and Bogut, everyone in your guys' rotation save Steph was a legitimate two-way player. And that's what I think is lost on a lot of people is that I've heard people say, well, Bogut's not a two-way player. I'm like, really? Because you can toss him the ball down underneath the basket and he can get you points. I mean, you look across the board at what that team would – the only guy that you guys don't have in your regular rotation who's not a legitimate threat as a two-way player is Zaza, and that's not a guy who's closing games out for you guys a ton.
I don't know personally if I would call Bogut a two-way player. He thrived in that system, but I typically just think of him mostly as defense. But, I mean, like, he's – amazing at screen setting, like he helps the offense run. But
yeah, I was gonna hem and haw on that a little bit. I mean, both of them, or Bogut was so good offensively, setting screens and passing from the high post, and he rolled sometimes. And they would have to run those plays to get him a dunk, and it often worked. They kind of ran some of the same plays that they're running for JaVale, I think, except that JaVale can jump over the rim, so they can have a lot more lenience in the, in how they pass it to him. Zaza has to me looked a little more comfortable offensively in the last 10-15 games, kind of understanding where he can get open, for kind of picking his spots a little more. So yeah, I don't know. They're not huge liabilities on offense, and I think that's what we had those players for so long in Golden State, of you know, in the kind of the Monte Ellis, David Lee era, Carl Landry, Jarrett Jack. It's like, you know, player after player, where it's, you know, you, this team is almost there. They just need to get another player that balances out the problems of this current play. And like, no, then you just have everybody trying to balance each other out. And then when one player goes down, or when you have to go to the bench, it's just like, it's a jigsaw puzzle that isn't going to work. It's going to get exploited somewhere.
That is 100% Portland.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the way that there's jigsaw puzzle, but the puzzle itself is, you're working with like three different puzzles.
Right.
Like the pieces, like you're pulling from one box and then from another box and then from another box. You think you've got a corner piece to one, it's going to go over here. And it's this mishmash of players that individually, they all give you something, but there's CJ's probably the only player on the entire roster that you can consider legitimate two-way player consistently.
How long before Olshay gets some real heat for like trying to piece this team together with crazy glue and call it a real puzzle? Like, I don't think that it actually makes a good picture. I think he's, you know, he's hammering pieces into place. He bought the pieces for a heck of a lot of money. You know, it's just, I don't see it coming together. I know, you know, part of this is, we look at it as like, you know, this is still part of a rebuild. The team's still, you know, we're going to build from the inside. We re-signed a bunch of our guys, but we're super committed in the salary. And I just don't see where these problems get fixed with the pieces we currently have.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, like, if there were any particular players that Blazers fans generally were hoping that Olshay would target, and whether that's by you know, trading away guys other than Damian or CJ, or specifically you know, breaking those guys up, trading CJ to try to get a major haul. Is there anybody that your fan base is like is crazy about, in, you know, within reasonable limits?
Well, there's a running joke in the comments where people say, how does this get us Chris Paul? But I mean, obviously that's not going to happen. I think the biggest impact player that people have their eye on is Hassan Whiteside, but they're kind of trying to dream that it'll happen without getting rid of CJ. And CJ has that poison pill, which makes it hard to trade him anyway, and that's kind of rough. So then you default back down to Nerlens Noel, and you've got a huge divide because people are like, oh, he's not the right character fit, and other people are over here saying, but he's real athletic and we need a rim protector, and no one agrees on anything. But you know, the general feeling is that we need someone to protect the rim.
If you look at how things have been from this summer till now, it hasn't changed. Portland was after a premier big. They were linked with Whiteside, and Whiteside has come out and said that Portland was second on their list. Woohoo! We've been the second. I know they were linked with other guys as well. They were looking for more playmaking and scoring punch from the wing, and they offered a near max to Chandler Parsons, which I'll sure we'll get to later. Nerlens Noel is the guy that keeps coming up and makes the most sense. I was talking to Ben Gulliver from Sports Illustrated earlier this week, and two things came out of it, in that he thinks that Noel is a legit target, and there's been conversation, but right now Joel Embiid has got basically LeBron power of the Sixers, and Embiid wants Noel around. So really? I don't think that they're going to let Noel go right away. I mean, Okafor's not even touching the floor. I mean, he's getting DNP after DNP.
Hey, maybe you guys can get Okafor.
That's what we need. We need more lack of
it's
defense.
A joke. It's a joke.
But the thing that comes out of this is that, or another spot that came out of this is that Ben suggested was Orlando looks like a very likely target for a deal for Portland, in that they have a glut of bigs and they don't have perimeter shooting. And while Vucevic has been a guy who's been linked, Ben actually suggested somebody like Serge Ibaka.
I was looking at that earlier and thinking that, I mean, the player that they would probably most likely to most like to trade if they could was Biombo.
Somebody that's been linked to Portland as well. And again, when we're talking about two way guys, yeah, you're not getting anything from him offensively. And that's,
which is again, maybe the reason why they would want to trade him over Ibaka, because you can put Ibaka and Vucevic, and then Gordon as the third big, make so much more sense than trying to fit Biombo in there and then having Gordon play the three, which still doesn't make any sense to me. And, that is a strange team right now, and it seems like they've got to make a move, but I don't know. So Ibaka, David, you are not excited about that prospect.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, if I can make the Tina Belcher noise any louder and on that one. But, I, you know, how old are Serge? Is 32 now? Is that right?
Nobody really knows.
Right.
He's one of those guys who you kind of guess.
He's been going downhill pretty steeply for the past season or two. And I feel like he's a guy you add to a team that's, like, close to being what they need to be. He's not the piece that turns it around. And if Portland's going to get rid of, like, one of their young guys on a good contract to try and bring in Serge Ibaka,
off the bricks there. Who's on a good contract?
I mean, like, Ed's on a good contract. Aminu's on a good contract. You know, I'd say CJ's on a good contract just because of just about anything's a good contract for CJ right now. Crab's on a horrible contract. I know there's a rampant speculation that he'll be dealt at the deadline, and I wouldn't be entirely surprised, but I don't know. It's hard for me to get really excited about Serge Ibaka, because to me, that's someone you add to a team that's, like, close to contention. And
I think that's part of the problem. This kind of continues the point in that the guys that Portland really needs to get are either young potential laden guys or stars that they're in their prime to put alongside them. And you either need draft picks, which Portland has at least theirs back now, or you need cap space, and they don't have any cap space. They have the second highest payroll in the league right now. And this kind of goes back to something that David brought up a minute ago, and that, you know, will the hot seat kind of start getting warmer for Neil O'Shea? And again, this is from talking to Ben Golliver. I mean, if things continue this way, we may see a coaching or GM change by the end of this year.
Coaching change. Harry does such a great job.
I mean, I think Stotts is a phenomenal coach, but this is again from Ben, who said that he believes that if things keep going this way, Terry's going to get sacrificed for Neil O'Shea to cash in his one coaching change card. I mean, that's crazy to think, you know, 8 months removed from last season.
The way you guys are kind of laying this out is that, like, you know, there is not a one player panacea for the team, and there's a really bad salary situation. Is kind of the next step. Like, well, we really should start to think about blowing it up. Like, does this have to go back to a rebuild?
Well, part of the problem there is you look at Neil O'Shea, and it's like he had to be a success. The Blazers were burning through GMs. They got someone that was doing good things for the organization through the draft. And now that he's, I would say, again, painted the team into a corner, like, the shine has worn off there. Like, something needs to change. And looking at the problem with the Blazers, it's not in that the players are necessarily, like, lacking in doing what they're able to do. It's just that the combination of what they're all able to do doesn't make a great team. You know, if we're at a point where we're discussing, like, Serge Ibaka being the turnaround, like, what's the ceiling of this team with Serge Ibaka on it? I mean, it's not high enough to call him a true impact in making the Blazers what they're supposed to be.
I mean, right now, I know David's against it. I've always been one of those guys, and you know where I'm going to go with this, David. In that,
I'm listening.
If you're not a legitimate contender, you need to be cutting salary and you need to be attaining draft picks. Look at what
I'm not necessarily opposed to that.
Yeah, but as soon as I throw in the T word, that's when we tend to disagree a little bit.
Okay, let's hear it. Oh, I mean, yeah, okay.
You go for the stealth tank. Portland has some young guys on their team. They've got Noah Vonleh. They've got Myers Leonard. Throw them out there. See what you got in them. Because right now, they're even if they make the playoffs, mathematically, they have almost no chance of getting above the eighth seed. They would have to go on an even more historic run than they did last year to get to the seventh seed. So they're going to be the sacrificial lamb to the Warriors.
I just think tanking is so bad for basketball overall. Like right now, the landscape is like four, maybe five teams you can call like legitimate contenders to win. And then everyone else you can make an argument for being like, blow it up. We don't need to really compete. We'll compete in 3 to 4 years when things cool off a bit. But, you know, if you look at it as an entertainment business, which I think it is, I just can't support tanking personally. I know a lot of fans are like, yeah, you know, we want the team to get better, and that's the way to do it, especially with a team that has historic problems attracting free agents and needs to build through the draft. But I, like, it's in my gut. I can't support tanking.
I get it. Ivan, I think you'll kind of back me up here. Every one of the top flight teams right now is where they are as a result of tanking.
Well,
let me see about that.
The Warriors, how did they get Harrison Barnes?
That was a little bit of a stealth thing. It's
okay.
True.
The Cavaliers?
Let me just back up 1 second here to yes, they did tank to get Harrison Barnes, but it's not like Harrison Barnes was the piece that turned them around.
No, you know, but the trades they made necessary, they got rid of the salary cap space. They got in young assets. I mean, these are all things that you have to do.
That's true.
I mean, look at the Spurs. Yeah. The Spurs had a tank.
I was about to say, what about the Spurs as they're constructed? Like, yeah, they got Tim Duncan way back in the day because of the injury stuff.
But that one player came as a result of an injury to David Robinson in their tank season.
Is he still on the team?
No, but it set the tone for that team going forward.
I don't know about
that. Here's another thing. They moved assets and saved salary. They moved a very, very good player, two-way player, in George Hill for the number 15 draft pick. That number 15 draft pick turned into Kawhi Leonard.
Did that number 15 draft pick actually like set them back in terms of performance and allow them to attain other assets there? I mean, like, that wasn't really a tank move. That was like a, we see potential in this guy and we're going to develop him. And now he's, you know, the best defender in the league, arguably.
Well, I think that there's the where I sit on this is that you can't just be in the eighth, ninth seed race every year and continue that because of the, like, the salary cap situation that you put yourself in. You have to, you know, either develop your youth, and that's kind of a stealth tank move, but it's also, it's just like, it's, you know, practicality wise, like, this is how you're going to get better. If you're going to be the ninth seed, you know, you've got to improve the players that you have and then try to, you know, hit on draft picks. And, it just doesn't really, you know, I like a team to fight for the eighth seed as much as anybody, but, you know, the long term, it usually doesn't make any sense unless there are, you know, good prospects, you know, an extra draft pick or two, somebody coming off the books that's going to kind of, you know, give you hope for the near future. But, like, if you're stuck with long-term salary and right in the middle of the pack there at the eighth, ninth, like, something has to happen. I don't think you can just sit pat.
Yeah, if you're taking a look at this team, if this was last year and they hadn't made that big run to get to the, you know, a top five seed, and this was last year and they're making a run for the eighth seed after a full rebuild with four starters leaving. Yeah, I could see that argument. I could see, like, okay, yeah, it'd be good for the team. Heck, look at Denver or Sacramento right now. If one of those teams ended up in the eighth seed, yeah, it makes sense for them to get there because they haven't been there in so long. And that playoff experience, even if it means getting swept or getting a gentleman sweep against the Warriors is their reward, it still gives them that experience. This Portland team was in the second round last year and has playoff experience. What playoff experience do they get by going and getting shelled in the first round this year? I just don't see the benefit in that. For me, develop the guys that you've got that are relatively young. Drop down a few spots in a draft that's supposed to be loaded, and you can't call a draft really loaded until 2 or 3 years afterwards. But see what you can capitalize on. If I can criticize Neil O'Shea on a lot of things. The things that I cannot criticize him on are his ability to draft. He has hit home runs with almost every single one of his draft picks. So to me, if you're going to load up in a particular manner, him and Chad Buchanan, the director of scouting, I mean, they got to stick together and get the most bang for their buck in the draft because they haven't done anything in free agency.
Yeah, and I'm not denying the benefits of tanking. It's just like a visceral thing. I can't.
Oh, I get you. It's brutal.
Yeah. No. It's against the human spirit. You know, we're supposed to fight for what's right. So we're going long here. I do want to talk about hey, tomorrow's matchup. And David, you talked to some players today about that matchup. How are they approaching it? What kind of inside scoop do you got for us?
Well, I think we're going to see a lot of switching on defense, but predominantly we're going to see Evan probably on Steph. He's guarded point guards before. I know he mentioned that when he was back in Philly, like sometimes Drew would play defense on a shooting guard and he'd take point. But, it's going to be interesting because a lot of the guys are sitting there saying like, okay, it's just another game. It's just another game. I know Noah is going to, I'm sure I'll write an article about this later today, but Noah's going to watch some film on Draymond tonight. He said that, you know, he knows his moves because they played in the playoffs. And there you go, Dan, that's your benefit for getting shelled. But, he's going to double down and make sure that he knows what he's supposed to be doing, get out there and go with energy and just make of it what they can. And I know the plan isn't to try and hold the Blazers or hold the Warriors down defensively because they're going to score 120, 130 points. They just need to try and outscore them, I think, is the plan.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue that one bit. Portland doesn't have the defensive mentality or the play type to be able to slow the Warriors down. It's one of those games where Dame is a guy who relishes this matchup, particularly in Oakland, so it'll be a little bit different here in Portland. But the match between him and Steph is usually one that's been spectacular. So spectacular, in fact, that Kerr has opted to keep Steph off of Damian Lillard for the last couple matchups. So what comes out of that in that I personally would like to see CJ involved more often if they're going to try and hide Steph on CJ, which has happened a little bit, but more often than not, he's put on Aminu. Or in this case, I guess it'll be Turner, which could be a different look for Portland because hiding Steph on Turner isn't going to work out the same because Turner's a guy that will take somebody smaller and punish him in the post. And Turner, for all the issues that have been talked about with his contract and how he fits him with this team, the one area he's been successful in this year in Portland's offense has been in the mid and high post. So if that kind of comes out of this game, I think that could be a really interesting wrinkle and could ultimately decide maybe some major swings in the game.
I do want to give a small shout out to Evan Turner, and it just in that, like, he is what he's supposed to be. He's just getting paid more than he ought to be it, if that makes any sense. Like, people get mad that he's not playing up to his contract, but I don't think that's necessarily his fault. You pay for Evan Turner, you get Evan Turner, and he's been doing pretty well lately.
See, it seems like he's going to be one of those players that's forever linked to his draft position, and both in expectations for how he plays and also in the salary that he gets. there always seems to be guys that, like, remember Kwame Brown was, you know, making $10 million a year, you know, even long after everybody realized he was no good. But the last, so this is the fourth game that the Warriors are playing against the Blazers. The first three have not been kind.
Competitive.
Losses for the Blazers by 23. The second game, 45. In the third game,
that's not the worst. That's not the worst loss in the NBA anymore. Thanks, Lakers.
And the last game, they only lost by 8, which was interesting because that was one of those games where Lillard was sitting, and Crabbe started in the backcourt with McCollum. McCollum handled along with Shabazz Napier played a bunch too in that game. Was that surprising at all? Like, can you point to like the length that Crabbe supplied, or was that probably one of those kind of fluky
little both
the time
that lineup with Damian out their defensive rating was much better. They also played at a slower pace, but their offensive rating dropped a ton too.
And I think part of it, sorry, just to interject, I'll let you have it back.
No,
it's just that, like, sometimes you take a big guy out of the equation, a big guy meaning like a big player, not necessarily like the center or something, but you take someone out of the equation and it kind of throws off the game plan. So even if you're fielding like a worse lineup, sometimes the opposing team doesn't react the way you'd expect. So that can lead to some of those close games like that. And that's, I don't know if you want to call that fluky or not, but it's just more a sense that, like, you know, teams don't know what to make of the Blazers when Dame's not there, because Dame's always there. And that creates a little bit of unpredictability.
Right.
Yeah. And you look at a guy like Alan Crabb, who another guy who got paid, and then, while his percentages across the board are spectacular, he was a guy early in the season who was hesitating a ton. The last couple of weeks, Crabb's been on fire. I mean, last night, he, besides Lillard, he was the second best player on the floor last night. I mean, just, I think it was 5 of 7 from three, if I want to double check the numbers. I mean, he was absolutely just launching bombs. When Alan Crabb, he is a pure shooter. And if he's not hesitating and he's coming off screens and just letting it fly, you're going to get a good night from Alan Crabb. The hesitation with him is always hesitation. And if that's the kind of guy that shows up, you know, tomorrow against the Warriors are going to have to pick their poison, because if they run that lineup out there with Damian, CJ, and Crabb, for if the Warriors decide to go small, that's a lineup that can do a lot of damage offensively. And the Warriors have to be a little bit careful of letting that team get going, because they're still a young team. They're the fourth youngest team in the NBA, and they feed on that. And don't get me wrong, the Blazers are more than willing to give any lead back. I mean, they had a 15 or 16 point lead last night, and they coughed that up with no tomorrow. So, but I think that's something that the Warriors need to be not really careful, but leery of, is letting Portland get out early, because if they start getting confident, that's when their ability to close games actually comes into play.
Well, and the Warriors have in recent games, and they were just on this this East Coast road trip and played a bunch of games kind of in a tight span, 3 games and 4 nights, and then 4 games and 6 nights. But as close to a scuffle, I think, as the Warriors can get. Didn't shoot well in Miami when Miami did shoot well and were able to outshoot them from the 3-point line. Charlotte was a pretty close game, you know, almost for the same reason. And you start seeing guys kind of like Crabb, like that kind of second level player where they need to hit those open shots that are created for them in order to be effective role players. Those have been going in against the Warriors in the last few days, last few games, and they looked a little tired. They look a little bit like they wish that the All-Star break was hitting now. So I do wonder if this is kind of a good time for Portland to be playing the Warriors, especially since you know, this is going to be the fifth game in a row away from home for the Warriors.
Which is the complete opposite for Portland, because Portland was out on road swings forever. Then they came home and had a 3-day break, and now they've played 2 games at home.
And this will be the second half of a back-to-back for Golden State, won't it?
Yeah, it will. Yeah, exactly. There's a okay, that's right. They are playing in Golden State tonight. Actually, totally forgot. That game is on in about an hour. That's exciting.
So, yeah, I mean, if you're looking at the way that the stars are aligning here for Portland, you would say that if there was a game that Portland was going to take in this series, this one has the most potential, right? The Warriors are struggling as of late. They're going to be coming off a back-to-back. Portland's going to be rested. They're at home. I mean, those are the kind of things that usually kind of smell trap game for the bigger favored team.
Yep. Well, the Warriors have already lost 2 games this month, so I don't think I don't think they can afford another one, you know?
We're talking about affording losses here. I think you guys can spare
How many games have the Blazers lost this month?
we're now mathematically guaranteed at least a 500 month, and that's a victory for us. So
really, that's great. Let's see, where do we have 21 wins now? I need to bring up the standings here. I want to say we're at 21.
21 and 27 currently, ninth in the race.
Well, you just watch out then, because the Blazers are cooking.
it'll be fun to see. I think Warriors fans generally love watching the Blazers, especially Lillard as an Oakland guy. He always seems to bring a great game and a whole bunch of people into Oracle. And so I think that's one of those matchups where Warriors are always kind of happy to play. And from player standpoint wise, it always seems like they get along as well. So, always a fun matchup. Really looking forward to it. All the best, luck for you guys, tomorrow night and the rest of the season. I hope that something comes along that gives a little bit of hope for that future.
Like a lottery pick?
That would help. That would help quite a bit, I think.
I want to go kind of haters ball on you here and just say I wish nothing but terrible bad things for you and everyone else.
I like to see the Warriors do well just because I'm a fan of good basketball, and they're playing good basketball. So good luck to you guys. Good luck to, I guess, us.
Hooray us.
We'll probably need it a little more.
Well, yes, absolutely. Good luck to you guys. It should be a fun game. I want to thank both Dan and David for coming on today. You could find them on Twitter at David McKay NBA and at D Meringue. Be sure to check them out on BlazersEdge.com, of course, the second best blog on SB Nation. Guess who's number one? Thanks for listening to Golden State of Mindcast. We'll talk to you soon.
Say hi to spring's most amazing style steal at Old Navy. One day only, today. Women's tanks are just $2. And don't forget to come in now to redeem your super cash. Hurry in. High fashion, Old Navy. Valid 4/29, limit 5 per customer. Select styles in stores only.